Welcome to One Decent Pastor, a weekly podcast of The Door located in Central Oregon, where three completely average guys join forces to make one decent pastor and to discuss, discover, and promote all things Bible.
And we're live.
Okay.
On One Decent Pastor.
Okay, can you still say it now, or you can't say it?
No, I was going to talk about more of what we should do to go through this, but Chad's in a hurry because we're late for a very important date.
Yeah, we're late. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three minutes late. We don't want to do that.
Not on Facebook today.
Yeah, we're not even on Facebook Live.
Kind of problem.
We'll post the link to Facebook, but yeah, we're not on Facebook Live. There's some wonky thing with our software and Facebook that's now plagued us for 2 weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
And I forgot that it plagued us last week. Otherwise, I would have got up here a little bit earlier this week to figure it out.
All right. So next week, remind Chad.
Yeah.
Right. Note to self.
Right.
Or note to Chad.
And then plug the computer in at the end so that when we miss for Thanksgiving, it won't be dead when we come in, because we've done that in the past too.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Well, so where have you
we'll
been?
We'll have a podcast next week. It'll be but the following week.
Correct.
Right?
That's what I'm getting at.
So where have you been?
I went to Idaho to see my family. So back in the saddle. So, yeah.
Okay.
Glad you're back.
Yeah. Wasn't one of those trips you really want to go do, but my dad's not doing well. And so had to go and see him. And, yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that for now. Cause I don't want to cry on the podcast.
And that's okay. Well, I mean, you know, it would shock everybody to see you cry.
I know. Some of the podcast people haven't seen it. So.
Oh, really?
Probably.
Well, it's about time for them to get exposed to it, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, Brent just has a super soft heart, and that's okay. I mean, that's good, right?
Yeah.
So what else? What's new with you, Chad?
I was just going to say real quick, we're missing David because he's under the weather today, so his chair is empty.
Oh, is that what's going
on? Faithful viewers.
Okay. I just now noticed.
Yeah. Oh, David's gone.
Yeah. So he's hopefully tuning in from home. Yeah, nothing new with me. Just, you know, work's been real busy these days. We're in budget season at my day job, and so I've been kind of neck deep in spreadsheets for a few weeks now.
Is that a happy place for you?
I don't mind it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it's a happy place, but I like spreadsheets. I'm a nerd that way.
Okay, that's kind of.
So I really don't mind it at all.
Yeah,
I had a spreadsheet that had a wonky formula on it, and I couldn't figure it out, and like I lost sleep over it.
Hmm.
And it, that is kind of nerdy.
I mean, when you start losing sleep
over a spreadsheet, you know,
through a weekend, and I'm just thinking, where is this wonky? Like I've checked everything and double checked and triple checked, and I couldn't find it. And then I just figured, you know, I'm probably just too deep into it that it's probably right in front of my face. And I just can't see it. You know, I'm missing the tree for the forest.
Uh-huh.
And so then I asked one of my coworkers, like, "Hey, could you take a look at this?" And like, took about 2 minutes. Like, "Oh yeah, it's right there."
There you go.
After my weekend of no sleep over this stupid formula.
Yeah. Well, like I said, if you're losing sleep over a formula on a spreadsheet, that's borderline nerdy anyway, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't hide my nerdiness all that well. So
I like spreadsheets too, but you'd never know by looking at me. I'm just kidding.
Right. I'll bet.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so what's David
new
is.
With you?
Let's see. So, what is new with me? Preached in Redna last week. Grace Bible up there. Great church, very door-esque, really. You know, I didn't get to see their pastor, of course, he was out of town, but a really neat congregation full of young families. And I think I mentioned to you guys before that they seem to be very culturally aware of what's going on, where God's put them and all of that, and trying to, contour to what extent they can, you know, in every way they can to reach that community. And so it's really neat. They're meeting in a high school at Ridgeview High School in the foyer of the gigantic foyer in high schools. Now, we didn't used to have that, but they've got, I mean, this thing is like Taj Mahal-like, right? And so they meet in there, and there was, I don't know, maybe about 150 souls. So, yeah, it was good. Good time to be there.
Cool. Yeah, it was fun to meet those guys. It's neat when you kind of find kindred spirits and other pastors, the way they're doing church and the way they think about it. We had them, two of the guys on. One's not there now. He went to Portland. But they're values and distinctives that they have on their website. When I went through and read it, they were written better than we would have written them, but it was the same thing as we would have said. And I thought, oh, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. Good group.
Yeah.
Well, are we ready to launch?
Let's do it.
Okay. So this morning we're on, for One Decent Pastor, we're on the religion business part two. So I want to start by apologizing for last week. I said that I would give the listeners how they could access these podcasts we're discussing. And so if I forget to do that today and I have to leave at 10:55 for some kids' Bible class business, you guys will be sure and do that. Just give the names of the podcast so that people can find them. So what we were talking about in review was the Sean Ryan Show with the Nathan Apfel interview.
That's the name of the podcast.
Yeah, you just said it. So there you go.
I did. Okay, so there you go. So we'll give it, you guys will faithfully give it again at the end, right?
Sure.
So who are Sean Ryan and Nathan Apfel? Again, just for those maybe that weren't listening last week, and just kind of get us up to speed. Who are these guys?
Sean Ryan's a former Navy SEAL turned podcaster, and he does these really long, you know,
turned Christian.
Yeah, and new Christian. Yeah. And does podcasts, and not necessarily faith-based. Sometimes they are, but he kind of covers a wide variety of topics on his podcast. Mm-hmm. So he has these guests on for kind of long interviews.
Are they all like 2.5-3 hours?
I think
pretty
so.
Long. Oh, it's kind of like the Rogan format where they're long.
Long form.
Honestly, I've only the only two podcasts of his that I've listened to are the ones that we're discussing.
About? Yeah, okay. Me too.
I've known of him for a long time and have seen some of his podcasts, but these are the only two that I've actually listened to.
This would be a good time for a disclaimer that we're not recommending these podcasts.
Yeah, we don't really know what the other episodes are about.
Because when he has guests on, or even the one that we watched, there was some language in it and stuff like that. So always watch these at your own risk.
Sure.
If you're sensitive to that kind of stuff, you might not want to tune in and check it out. But they weren't. It wasn't horrible, I don't recall. But
no.
The interesting thing about him is that he is it's a very conversational podcast. But he admits at the outset that he is just a baby Christian.
Right. He's still learning.
Brand new.
As we all are.
Still learning. Right. And so, but that provides an interesting dynamic for that's an interesting dynamic that would be with Nathan Apfel. So who is Nathan Apfel? The guy that he's interviewing. Yeah. Who is this guy? What do we know about him?
He's an investigative journalist who has this expose. I don't know if that's his word, but an expose on, I think, primarily mega churches. But when you watch the Sean Ryan podcast, it seemed like he was kind of speaking about all churches. That part wasn't super clear, but the religion business is his, I don't know how many episodes it is, but a number of, like a docuseries maybe, on, you know, some of the inherent problems with mega churches and churches being run like businesses.
Right. He's a filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
So this podcast on Sean Ryan's Show was about the series that you're talking about, which is about it's called The Religion Business, which is kind of self-explanatory. So what's the main subject, would you guys say, to just kind of help us get our oars in the water about what's the main subjects that they talked about on this podcast?
I would say some of the corruption that exists within the church, which is a real thing. And so because there's some corruption here and there, this guy's formed some opinions. This podcast got recommended to us by several people kind of in a short period of time. And that's partly why we tuned into it. And it is the same kinds of things that bother us about church is the things that they talked about. But kind of maybe went a little further than we might have with all of it. So
sure. I think we all agree that there's maybe not a solid ecclesiology that's present with
Apfel. And ecclesiology is what?
The study of the church. So not a grounding on, you know, what the church is and should be and God's love for the church, right? Mm-hmm. The Bible tells us that Christ gave his life for the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like Brent said, while we would agree that, you know, on the problems that are pointed out, maybe the solutions is where, you know, we would depart ways. And I think that has to do with, you know, the lack of ecclesiology, solid ecclesiology.
Okay. Well, that's good. Or biblical ecclesiology for sure. So we're just going to quickly go over a couple of statements we did last week to kind of get us in the same stream, because we'll press on further. So if you guys want to comment on about this just quickly, then we can move on. One of the statements that Nathan Apfel made on this podcast is, quote, "Because the church deals with money, it is a business. And the question that I have is there a distinction between having some involvement with something and having that thing become your identity? Because he says, because the church deals with money, it is a business. That's an identity thing.
Sure.
What do you think about that?
I think that points to the lack of a solid ecclesiology. Just coming back to that idea. You know, there is an aspect to what we do in the church as just an organization, right, that manages a calendar and manages a bank account and, you know, has events and those kinds of things.
And spreadsheets.
And spreadsheets, yes.
nothing wrong with those.
Yep, no. Long live the spreadsheet. But at its core, the church is not a business.
But I think it, to his point, it's often run as a business.
Right.
So I think the American church, maybe others, but has kind of been structured like in the CEO structure model,
right,
where you've got the person at the top, you know, and so I get his point. I don't think it should be run like a business.
Right.
There are business aspects, like Chad said, but when you see it run completely like a business, bottom line, numbers, marketing, that there's something wrong with that. That's not right. What the New Testament church looks like. And so if you're running it that way, there is a problem.
Well, and isn't it fair to say too, though, that if you do just classify the church as a business, then you've already got your broad brush out, you know, where you can kind of paint everything,
right?
Like, since it is a business, and any way that it behaves like a business is bad,
right?
And so,
well, and you've got to look at the early church and say, he's not calling that a business, and guess what they had?
You're right,
money,
right,
right, yeah, right.
They dealt with money, so
yeah,
and you know, the idea of like, you know, pastorpreneurs, you know, that's a thing, you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, the pastor is an entrepreneur and that it just contributes to, you know, again, just poor ecclesiology, because that's not listed anywhere in the qualifications in the Bible for one who's called to be a pastor.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that's a really good point. So Ryan comments that, Ryan, who's the baby Christian, comments that the Bible study that meets in his home is a church. So can a Bible study rightly be designated as a church? Why or why not?
I would say the church can meet in a home for a Bible study, but it's not a church because it's meeting in a home,
right,
for a Bible study, if that makes sense.
Right.
It doesn't automatically make it a church, because there are distinctives as far as what make a church. And in the Bible, it's the you have elders and you have deacons and you have sacraments and you have mm-hmm. you have some kind of a structure there that makes it a church. And so when Paul would say appoint elders in every town, mm-hmm. When he was establishing churches, that's because that was a necessary component
yep.
to them.
Right.
And so I think that, again, you've got this Nathan Apfel guy, and I think Sean Ryan had bought into this idea that if there's two or three Christians, you got yourself a church going.
Right.
And it's like, well, yeah, no, you've got fellowship happening.
Right.
It's not necessarily the same thing.
Right. That's good. That's a good description of that. So are there some things that a Bible study might not have that are absolutely necessary? And you talked about a couple of them, but for instance, if you get together in a Bible study to talk about Jesus, well, who is he? You know, and where does the authority, you know, to teach right. about that stuff come from and,
right.
and like that. So, or if it comes to a matter of correcting and shepherding and things like that, there has to be ecclesiastical, right, authority
yep.
installed for those things to happen. Otherwise, they don't. But it's kind of like the idea here is that if you just skinny down and simplify enough, then you get the real church,
right?
Right?
Yeah, right.
And that ain't necessarily so. Okay, so you already talked about this, Brent. Nathan continues, quote, where two or more are gathered together, the rest is tradition. Now, aside from the misappropriation of that Matthew 18 context, which is what, Brent? You've talked
well,
about
it's church discipline is the context of it, and they're saying establish this whatever this claim is with two or three witnesses, and yep. if you've got two or three people that agree on this thing, I'm with you in this. I got your back. Mm-hmm. Is kind of what's being said there. It has nothing to do with, you know, for this to be for the Lord to be with us in a meaningful way, you've got to have two or three gathered. That's not that's right. the way everybody takes it, and I don't know how it got there, but that's it.
Well, and so from that, aside from that, a misappropriation of that Matthew 18 context that you just talked about, Nathan Apfel seems to dismiss much of church life as artificial or even worse, superficial. And he said anything kind of beyond that is tradition.
Yeah, I don't even, that's not even biblical. And this is one of my issues with him is that he seems to pay attention to what we would call the red letters of the New Testament. So he looks at the Gospels and the words of Jesus, and he seems to give weight to those. He seems to ignore all the other, the black letters. And the problem is that they're all red letters.
Right.
If it's God-breathed, you've got to pay attention to all of those things. And you do see, you see structure and churches meeting, and you see more than two or three gathered in these places. And it's like, it's just, there's not really a leg to stand on with a lot of where he's coming from.
Right. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay. So, it sounds like from the way that he put that, the rest is tradition, which is if you could just lop that off, then again, skinny down, simplify, and then you've got the real church. So, are all traditions in churches bad?
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is that not all traditions are bad. Some traditions
good. I was just about to ask that question.
Good, right? you know, traditions can, like anything, you can, you know, get things to an unhealthy level. You know, if you're just holding on to a tradition that just needs to die, but in and of themselves, no, nothing wrong with traditions.
Well, even the fact that as a church, as the pastors at the door, we've been going back to the traditions of the church and finding great meaning in the creeds and confessions and the kind of, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of a lot of good doctrine throughout the years. And so there's this idea that if it's new, it's not true. And if it's true, it's not new. And so the idea that tradition, there's a safety. It's not, it doesn't mean you can rely on it. It's not, you know, thus so, saith the Lord.
It has its proper place.
But it has, there is safety in tradition. And there's even a call back to it right now by a lot of young Christians that are kind of going back to some of the more Roman Catholic and Orthodox and Anglican. And, you know, because they're looking for something that's that's got some grounding underneath it. And so I like that idea of tradition much more than I did for a while there.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, good. I appreciate those answers about traditions because they're not all bad. And by getting rid and by saying that everything beyond two or three getting together is tradition, it's just a colossal overstatement.
Right.
And it paints traditions in a unfairly bad way. So concerning pastor's pay, he goes on to say, I don't think anyone can take money throughout their career and not be eaten by the system. No one can get away from the corruption, is what he said. And he goes on to say, congregants are all religious consumers. So when he says anyone, I don't think anyone, no one can get away from the corruption. Congregants are all religious consumers. So that sounds like kind of a broad brush again.
What would you say to that? Pretty broad and pretty bold statements.
I mean, there's just a lot of folly in statements where you make exclusive statements like that. Are there dangers of you know buying into the corruption? Once you start to pay somebody in ministry, there's always that idea. Now we own you now, and now you have to do everything. And you know when we say jump, you have to say how high. I mean, there's this kind of an idea, and then you've got the other side where pastors can all of a sudden go, wow, if I want to continue to make money and keep cashing these checks, I better not say anything that's going to turn these people away. And so you have all these things you've got to think about. But again, that doesn't mean every pastor out there is doing that or that they're all making enough money to really, you know, it's like, well, you know, fire me. I don't care, whatever. You guys are hardly paying me anything. There's a lot of pastors out there that probably are working two jobs and pastoring, you know. So the idea that if you make money, you bought into some kind of a corrupt system and that you're going to become corrupt is just silly.
Well, it seems to be the things that make the headlines are, you know, the mega churches and the, you know, the well-known, you know, pastors that have a following. But I have to think that there are thousands upon thousands of just, you know, small churches out there that nobody's paying attention to, that aren't making headlines, that have pastors who are faithful, who have congregants that are faithful, who are faithfully proclaiming the gospel in their communities. And that's part of the struggle with this interview is that the guy seems to just kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. So to Brent's point, is there corruption out there? Sure.
And consumerism.
And consumerism, 100%. That's been a soapbox of mine for a long time.
Absolutely.
Is religious consumerism. It exists, but maybe not to the degree that we're led to believe.
Well, and then the solution, you know, that he offers is to skinny down, dumb down, simplify, you know, make small, you know, the two or three idea together.
Yeah.
The solution is also a broad brush with a kind of one size fits all.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like.
Well, and again, at the end of the day, not even biblical solutions.
Yeah, right, correct.
Because the Bible allows pastors to get paid. There's times where Paul took pay, and there's times when it says give double honor to those who preach. And so it's, you're already now doing something that's not only extra biblical, but non-biblical. Mm-hmm. And then consumers, you know, you don't see a lot of that kind of, there was a lot of churches that had lots of people meeting and they weren't all consumers. So
yeah,
I don't know.
And I've said this before, if you misidentify the problem, you're going to also misidentify mm-hmm. the solution. And the problem is not necessarily pastors taking pay or, you know, congregants who are consumers. Those are symptoms, I think, again, going back to just poor ecclesiology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so when you're, you know, zeroing in on the wrong problem, then you're never going to arrive at the right solution either.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the day, the Baptists had a solution, kind of one size fits all saying about this, and went like about pastor's pay. It said, Lord, we'll keep them poor and you keep them humble.
There you go.
So anyway, whatever happened to that? So he says, too, and I get this kind of notion that there is an antipathy. Because he sees Christians that are involved in churches and paints them with a broad brush, that there's almost kind of an antipathy about it. And it came out in this statement. He said he would rather be with druggies than with Christians who sing about the greatest things but secretly are POSs.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have
something. Just bagging on the people that God loves. I mean, you know, that's not good. Again, Christ gave his life, you know, for POSs.
Right.
And you know, we ought to consider that. But I get kind of where he's coming from in a sense. Like he's I think, zeroing in on authenticity.
Yep.
And you know, there's something about, you know, being with kind of the worst of society, but at least they're authentic, and you kind of know what you're dealing with versus, you know, the church crowd is kind of known oftentimes for being hypocritical and inauthentic. And I think we would agree that that's a frustration as well, and it shouldn't be. But the answer isn't to say, well, you know, screw those people. I'm just going to go hang out, you know, right. with, you know, the druggies over here because at least they're authentic.
Yeah. Right. Right. And yeah, and that's, in a way, it was a little bit alarming to say that he would rather be with the one than the other, that the authenticity is a bigger bell to him than the fact that they're redeemed.
Yeah.
You know, the Christians are redeemed, you know, with all the struggles and everything else that we have.
Yeah. Well, again, I have to think that there are many, 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 many churches out there that have, you know, authentic people sitting in the pews from week to week. Our church is one of them, I think. You know, we just have a wonderful group in both of our locations of people that are authentic with one another and authentically love the Lord. I have to believe that's more common, again, than we're led to believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wonder about his church experience.
You do.
Yeah. Because whatever he's seen is creating this. And I've been in church experiences where I've seen that fakeness.
Sure.
You know, and then you see them outside of church, then you see them in church, and you're going, whoa, 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 you know. And so I there is something there, but right. to say that all churches are that way is ridiculous.
Right.
Well, or to say because of the failures of Christians that you don't want to meet with them kind of puts yourself on a different plane. Well, I'm not like that.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, the Bible says that you are, right?
Yeah.
You know, well, we're all cut from the same cloth.
This might be a stupid analogy, but we only do this with the church, right? When your favorite player has a bad game, you don't say, well, screw football, I'm not going to participate in football anymore because, you know, my team lost. You know, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater in any other thing, but we tend to do that with the church.
I'm a Cowboys fan, so I'm not sure I agree with you.
Well, and I was going to say
you're still a Cowboys fan, right?
The New York Jet fans, you know, probably might argue with that. But, yeah, generally it's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're getting into the new territory. Many churches teach about tithing, but Nathan, and he makes a big case about the fact that the tithe is taught and abused, and that it is part of one of the building blocks that allow for the corruption in the church that there is, about the tithing and 10%. We'll talk about what that tithing is in just a minute, but here's what he says about it. Nathan Offel says that it is because the pastors see themselves as the priests benefiting from the tithe that's why it's taught, is because pastors benefit from the tithe. And then he goes on to dismiss the whole thing because the entire tithe requirement in the Old Testament is not observed. So what is a tithe? And tell us about the tithe.
Yeah, the Old Testament prescribes 10% of whatever you bring in, the first fruits of what you bring in, you give back to the Lord in some sense. And so if the temple was there, that's where you would give it. And it wasn't always money. It could have been, you know, flour,
produce.
You know, there were all kinds of different you know, ways that you could do it. But it was a reminder that that you're giving your best and first to God, and you're relying on Him. And so the 10% was prescribed in the Old Testament for, and I can completely see how it was used to run the temple and pay the priests and things like that. So
it was used to finance their theocracy.
It was
right.
Yeah, correct.
And so, but he says that and of course this is true. That there were two other tithes, you know, that were seasonal, and one tied to a festival. And then if you added them all up together, it came up to somewhere over 23%. But he says that that pastors don't teach that. And so the whole idea of the tithe is to just be discarded. And besides that, it's abused because the pastors see themselves as the priests that are supposed to benefit from the tithe. What's wrong with that whole scenario?
That's some bad news for Nathan.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
It's 100%. So the New Testament changes the whole paradigm to say,
how does it change it?
Well, it all belongs to God. Everything, you belong to God, and everything you have belongs to God. And so your time and your money and everything belongs to Him, 100%. And so He wants us to recognize that and then to cheerfully be generous people of God.
Yep.
And so you even see this early in the church, which kind of baffles me because they were literally in the book of Acts. They were selling their possessions. They were making sure that everybody was taken care of. There was kind of this crazy thing going on there where nobody thought what they had was their own. Mm-hmm. It all belonged to God. And so they shared with each other.
Yep.
And this is really kind of more what the New Testament. So it's almost like everything else. You know, Jesus did this thing. You know, you've heard it said. Well, I tell you, and it's just the same with the tithe. You've heard it said 10%. No, it's everything, including all you have and all you are. And so that's really the model. Now, can a church or a pastor take that and abuse it to get rich? Gee, I wonder if we've ever seen that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's disgusting. But that's not. But it doesn't mean you throw it out and say it's not worthwhile.
Right.
And there again, I can't remember this. Maybe you had these stats last week. I can't remember, but you know, however many mega churches there are in the United States, relatively speaking, it's not that many, right? But they are the ones that make the headlines. And so we see the corruption and we see the abuse of money and power and those kinds of things. But there are, you know, thousands upon thousands of churches, again, throughout the United States that are small congregations that aren't raking it in, who have pastors who are squeaking by. I just think of the pastors that I know in my own circles, and I don't know any pastors that are just crushing it financially. I mean, I know a lot of pastors that, you know, their needs are met. You know, they're not, you know, their churches aren't, you know, trying to squeeze them. But I don't know any that, you know, A, are in it for the money, or B, that are just, you know, crushing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just more painting with a broad brush here.
But the ones that are seem to get all the ink.
Right.
You know,
right.
The ones that are abusing the system and so forth.
Yeah. But, I mean, I read a headline the other day of a pastor who charges $36,000 a year for marital counseling.
Oof.
It's crazy.
We can charge for that?
I guess. Who knew?
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, but I think part of it is he describes as pastors seeing themselves as the priests that are kind of entitled to this 10%, and that should come to them, and then the abuses flow out from that. But even for churches that still teach tithing, right? Tithing is way more nuanced than just saying, you know, you have to do the whole 23.3% and all of that, and that a failure to, you know, look at it like that way just kind of trashes the whole system. Because there are, you know, like I said, there are churches that do teach tithing, but they teach it in terms of stewardship. We'll get to that question in a minute.
I do want to point out that part of our paradigm at the door from day one was that we weren't going to emphasize giving and money. And we probably have done it to the point of being, you know, maybe we should talk about stewardship more often than we do at the door. But because we've seen the abuses, we said we're not going to pass the plate. We're going to have boxes on the wall. We're really not going to talk about money. I mean, I don't think we've preach sermons on money more than maybe twice. We always make
the. You always have me do it.
We had John G. do it one time too, back in the other building. But we just don't do it because of the abuses that he's keying in on. And God has always been faithful to
somehow
give
the needs are always
everything
met,
we've ever need. You know? And so God's people have just been faithful to give without us having to really say anything about it. Mm-hmm. And if we ever got in a spot where we needed to have a family meeting and say, "Hey guys, we're, you know, we're not going to be able to pay our bills this month," we would do that. But we've never had to. So.
Right. And so there's looking at the whole subject of giving in terms of the the needs of the church and the expenses and what it takes to float right. the boat and fly the plane. But there's also the idea of the need of Christians to give as an act of worship,
sure.
as an act of participation in the body,
yeah.
and in recognition that God owns everything.
Right.
So it's not just a need-based thing. It's also it's an ecclesiology.
Yeah.
It's a theologically
based
thing.
Faith is an act of worship
sure.
to God who provides for your needs. Mm-hmm.
And actually, when we've preached about that, or at least me, that's been kind of the thrust of it, you know, is about giving out of gratitude and understanding that God, that it all does belong to
right.
God, and that I have a need to be giving to God as an expression of worship.
Yeah.
That's a big need. It's not just about how much we have in the account at a time.
I do want to say a couple quick things. One, slightly off topic, but with your hard stop, we got about 20 minutes, so just wanted to give a clock update there. But also, you know, one of the things that we value, you know, here at the Door is that we run pretty lean in terms of,
yep.
you know, our budget, our expenses, you know, those kinds of things. You know, there's not really any fluff in the budget. And kind of the bigger that a church gets, I think the harder it is to be lean. You know, when you're a church of, you know, 1,000 people or thousands of people, you do have a big machine that needs to be fed. You know, we don't have, you know, a giant building that has a lot of expenses that needs to be taken care of. We don't, just not a lot of fluff.
And that's
it's intentional on our part that that we don't have a lot of kind of extra stuff like that in the budget.
Because, with the growth of any organization, and even though a church is not primarily an organization, there are organizational aspects
right.
to it, that as it grows, it can become, just like as a business, it
right.
can become bureaucratic.
Well, we do need to be stewards of the things that we do have, right? God gave us a building. We need to steward it well and put money into it when it's necessary. But at the same time, you know, we want to make sure, you know, we're a very outward-facing church, and so a lot of our money, you know, goes out into the community and outreach and those kinds of things. We, you know, we try to be generous with our building and generous with our funds when there's a need.
Sure.
And even, you know, people within, you know, one of the beauties of the church that Brent mentioned earlier, you know, in Acts, they gave to one another as they had need. And we try to do that on a corporate level, that when,
yep.
you know, people that are part of us have a need, we try not to hesitate to meet needs when we're made aware of them.
Yeah. So Nathan goes on to say that that in the U.S., we have, and I think in context, he's comparing the modern church in America to the pre-Reformation Catholic Church, okay? And he says that in the U.S., we have 400,000, which is the amount of churches, we have 400,000 mini Vaticans. Now, what do you think that he means by that?
That's an interesting statement.
I'm not even sure what he means by it, because I think it's a ridiculous statement. But when you look at mega churches and how they're kind of these autonomous, no accountability, get to do what they want, lots of money, I think that's where he's going with it. But 400,000, I don't know where he's even coming up with that idea or what he means.
Some are churches.
Yeah, but that's not.
But many Vaticans, that's an interesting claim.
Yeah.
Well, at the Vatican, there is one person at the top.
Right.
No accountability.
Everything goes that way. Yeah, there's no accountability. And it makes that kind of setup makes it ripe for abuse.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Agreed.
And he's saying that that there's 400,000 of these things in the United States, and they're all, again, many Vaticans.
Yeah, all corrupt.
Broad brush, all corrupt and so forth. So he said that his purpose was to encourage our faith and encourage generosity. And at the outset of the podcast, do you think that he accomplished that? Why not?
I don't. Again, we would agree largely on some of the problems that he's pointing out, just not on the solutions. And like I didn't find it to be redemptive, if I could use that word. You know, a more redemptive approach might be to say, you know, here are the problems, but here's, you know, where God can redeem and God's people can participate in redemption, rather than just saying, you know, screw it all.
A pox on all your houses.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say he did the opposite. So I would say he probably discouraged faith in the church. So he basically made people don't trust this in any way and don't give to it in any way.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how that stimulates generosity to say that it's all going down the tubes and it's all corrupt. But so that we don't paint with the same broad brush that we're saying that Nathan Apfel has, we do want to acknowledge that some of the points that he brought up, or at least some of the areas that he brought up, are very valid.
Sure.
Right?
Well, for sure. I mean, and that's part of why that's why it resonated with some of the people that recommended it to us. And David said he was convicted by some of it. We are too. But, I don't know if it's it kind of made me feel better about what we're doing when I kind of heard some of the criticisms. It didn't make me feel like, oh no, what are we doing? It was kind of more of a like, oh, thank you that we're not guilty of these things. If he came to the door, I don't think he would, have a smoking gun ready to go here. So,
and we've tried. I mean, we value accountability, and so we've intentionally tried to put things in place for accountability, because we see things like this and we don't want to become that. Mm. And I don't think. And I don't know about this, but I'll just say anyway, I don't think a lot of the mega church pastors that we see and that we're kind of, picking out on these kinds of things probably didn't start off saying, I'm going to build this huge thing and I'm going to sit atop my throne.
Right.
Maybe some of them did, right?
Right.
But a lot of them probably didn't. And for whatever reason, their thing grew and it got big and they got attention and became somebody in the world and somebody of notoriety. And here they are.
Right. Right.
And so I don't think a lot of them started out by saying I'm going to build this thing and I'm going to benefit from it and be corrupt.
And that's to his comment. He says no one escapes the corruption.
Yeah.
And so there again is that broad brush, because it does definitely happen sometimes. Sure. For sure. Right.
Sure.
If we're going to wrap up in 10 minutes, you need to cherry pick what you're going to go through or what you're not, because we're not getting through the end.
All right.
I mean, just saying.
So after this podcast that, may have unduly influenced the largely negative, unbalanced criticisms of the local church by Nathan Apfel, after that, shortly, and might have even been the next week, I don't know, there was another podcast on the Sean Ryan Show, featuring an Armenian Christian fellow by the name of Ruslan KD.
Not to be confused with Arminian.
He's from Armenia.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I want to clarify. Yeah.
All right.
He might be Armenian. I don't know.
I don't think he's a Calvinist either. But
Russian subset. Okay. Yeah. The country. The geography.
Yes.
Armenian. Christian with an obvious love and appreciation for the local church. And so one week he has Nathan Apfel. The next week he has Ruslan KD. So what do we know about Ruslan KD and his story, real quick?
He's a hip hop artist. He's a podcaster. That's about all I know.
Well, he's got a pretty popular YouTube channel where he talks about a lot of Christian things. Has interviews. Kind of one of these guys that's always looking for a hot take. And so I haven't loved his YouTube channel a ton, but I found a new appreciation for him when he came on this because he basically went through and talked about his history. And he grew up kind of in a communist country. Saw a lot of corrupt things in the church. Got involved in gang stuff. Really became an atheist because he hated the church and he hated what was going on in the country he was from. And then God got a hold of his heart. And I think he was on a cleanup crew, some kind of a doing community service with some lady that kept sharing the gospel with him. Mm-hmm. And he saw something different in her. And then he becomes a Christian. And so he kind of went, when he saw the Sean Ryan podcast, I don't know who reached out to who, but he went, wait a sec. He saw somebody basically attacking the church and he went, no, the church meant a lot to me and it probably saved my life. And
he says that much.
I mean,
one was redemptive.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the church, he kind of went to bat for the church, and I loved that. I loved that he stepped up, and I was super impressed with, how he, his attitude, his knowledge, and the way he approached it. Mm-hmm. It was very helpful.
Yeah, I agree.
And it kind of undid some of the stuff that the other guy.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing about his approach too, though, is that he acknowledged the problems, some of them that he suffered as a result of, the sexual abuse as a child, abuse by one of his leaders, and also, I mean, something that I think that just really crushes a lot of people. It had come out that he had suffered sexual abuse at the hands of some people that were under the control of the church. And yet when this surfaced, he came in, when he was 13, I think he said he had his ear pierced and he had a little earpiece in like that. And the church seemed to be more concerned about that earpiece than it did about the fact that he'd been sexually abused. So you talk about hypocrisy. Right. I mean, if somebody was going to start beating the church up about that, but that's not where he goes with it.
Right.
He talks about the blessing of this lady and the local church and I think he says, if it wasn't for the local church, I would not be alive.
Well, it taught him how to be a godly man. It taught him how to be a husband. It taught him how to be a father. I mean, he just went, you know, it gave him accountability. This is what the church does. And I love that he saw all the benefits of the community of God's family and what it does when you're part of it, instead of just seeing all the corruption,
Right. Like, But as opposed to Nathan Apple, who seemed to kind of paint everything in a negative way, he didn't paint everything in a positive way. About the church. I mean, he acknowledged the problems that there are, but at the same time, he also recognized how God worked through that as a benefit, and God uses the local church.
Well, and there's beauty. Know? The church is a beautiful mess, to be sure, but it's beautiful.
Okay. And so with respect to, they didn't spend a lot of time on this, but in this particular podcast, but they did talk about church finances, and he talked about healthy transparency in finances. Mm-hmm. What do you think healthy transparency would look like?
Well, I can just speak to kind of what we consider that to be. And so, you know, our books are open, right? People can request to see the books anytime. Again, we don't have
Which set? I'm just kidding. Both sets?
Sorry. You can't joke about that kind of stuff. Right?
I'm kidding.
So rumors get started, man.
We only have one set. I'm kidding.
Can we edit that
part out?
I'm kidding.
We don't have a ginormous, our budget's pretty simple, right? You know, the things that we spend money on are pretty simple. So that helps, you know, when someone comes to look at it, it's not going to be hard to figure out, you know, kind of what we value based on where we spend our money. You know, we try to be known in the community, in different associations, so that if we ever do go off the rails, that, you know, there are people that will know because they know us that would say, hey, those guys are going off the rails. Within our own church, you know, we have a board of trustees who kind of serve as an accountability, you know, board, overseeing, you know, the finances especially. You're part of that. And so we've put these measures in place. I mean, I suppose in anything where there's a will, there's a way if somebody really wants to be corrupt. But we've tried as best as we can to put things in place.
Well, even the co-equal model that we have helps, that you're not putting one person at the top with people underneath them. There's accountability even at the top. So and I like that as well.
Yeah,
and I also don't know who gives, which is
huge. That's okay. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, that was another thing from the start. We never wanted to know. We know what comes in. We know the amounts that come in, but we don't.
But you're not the ones that look at what the names are behind the amounts.
Now, when we first started, I did it because we had to. And as soon as I could get out of that, we brought somebody else in to take care of it. But that way, we don't treat people differently. If you're a person that doesn't give at all, we don't know that. If you're a person that gives, you know, $3,000 a month, we don't know that. So it doesn't change how we view people or treat people.
Yep.
Or, you know, because you could easily start schmoozing the givers and making sure that they have, you know, the comfy seats up front and give them what they need. And then, you know, the non-tithers, it's like,
the whole
James
thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That's really important. But I think the thing about transparency is the fact that there's nothing that you can't find out if you want to about where the money goes here.
Sure.
Not everybody's interested in a granular level about where every dime goes, but were somebody to be that way, they could probably find out down to the
dollar. Regularly get the financial reports. So there's multiple eyes on the finances.
Yeah, there are. And the other thing is there, in terms of the church, this is pretty much an in and out thing. The money comes in and this is where it goes. We don't have investments in, you know, LLCs that are that are brought in as nonprofits, to where what goes on in that LLC is not, you know, that it's secret and it's hidden, and you can only get up to it and find out that something's there, but you don't know what's there. There isn't none of that here. This is more of a money in, money out kind of thing, and anybody that wants to. It's available. The door's open to look at
100%.
It, right? So that's good.
100%.
Okay, so just talking about this whole thing from 10,000 feet, it sounds like And you mentioned this earlier on, Brent, that Nathan Apfel at least considers that fleecing the church is just something that's happened in the last 500 years. True or not true?
Well, you got a couple called Ananias and Sapphira that were pretty, you know, pretty active at doing it. It's always been there and it always will be. And it, from the beginning of time, you're going to find that if you can step on somebody else to you know, gain, you will. And so it's nothing new. It's always been there. It always will be. And I would say just, you know, be watching for it for sure. And if you see it, you know, if anybody ever saw us do anything that looks suspect in that regard, I would expect them to bring it up, you know, to confront us with it.
So it is not new.
No.
And it's been going on in the church, and God warns in Jude and Second Peter about one of the things about false teachers is that they're greedy and that they mislead and all that kind of stuff. So if there's transparency, well, first of all, you're going to often see something like that surface when what people are teaching and preaching about the Bible doesn't conform with the Bible, right? And that the greed kind of comes along hand in hand with that. So, but in just in what general ways can Nathan's work benefit the church?
I mean, just that we're aware of the problems, because I think there are some people that maybe would stick their head in the sand, right? And we do this with our own political parties as well, and don't acknowledge the problems on our side, but acknowledge all the problems on the other side. Mm-hmm. So I think realizing, you know, the human propensity for sin and corruption should keep us all on our toes, but not just the other person's propensity for sin and corruption, but your own propensity for sin and corruption. Mm-hmm. And we would do well to just be mindful of that all the time. And then, like what we've done, to put measures into place as much as possible to prevent against that. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can ever, you know, fully prevent against it, but we can put measures into place to mitigate it as much as possible.
To make it harder. And I think it's one of the things that Nathan Apfel was pointed out is that the way that some churches have been structured actually invites that kind of thing, right?
Well, I would love to warning? See.
Yeah,
no, I've got a 5-minute warning.
I would love to see more accountability. Like some of the stuff he's calling out, I think the government should look into some of these churches and put a stop to it. I think there's ridiculous things happening, you know, because you have a 501c3 that shouldn't be allowed to happen. But but to make people skeptical of every church out there is irresponsible and probably something you're not going to want to stand before God and answer for someday.
Yeah, and so he's not the first person to notice this, though. And I noticed that in all, actually both podcasts, which amounted to 5.5 hours, nobody brought up the ECFA. Does anybody know what that is, the ECFA?
I can't think what it stands for, but it's an accountability
Evangelical
board.
Council for Financial
Accountability.
Accountability.
Yeah.
Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, and it is a very rigorous for nonprofits, particularly Christian ones. That it's a protocol that you have to fill out and provide transparency into the numbers of what your where your money comes from and what it's spent on. But that's been around for a long time. It's very cumbersome. But you'll find oftentimes at the bottom of some churches, but mostly peer church organizations, you'll see this little seal down there. It's ECFA. That's not just a rubber stamp. That means that they go through it's grueling, you know, to meet that standard. But there is that. So. And it's a safeguard, and Nathan Apfel is not, I mean, he didn't even mention it. It's like, there's, I'm the first guy that thought that maybe there's some corruption. We need to look into this. Right. Just taking, Rosalind KD's approach to, the local church, and Nathan Apfel's approach is that the church is a business. Do you think that it relies more on the vulnerability of the system to corruption or the condition of the heart? You spoke a little bit about that, Chad.
Both.
In other words,
both and.
Is it the money or is it the love of it?
Yes. I mean, it's the love of money and the love of power. And again, going back to just a poor ecclesiology as far as what should the church be and what should the church be about. You know, those should be our starting points in conversation.
Right.
But I'll say it again, at the end of the day, you know, Christ gave his life for the church. And one pastor one time said that it's a shameful thing to come out against the thing that God loves the most. Mm-hmm. And it's the church. And I think we can have a couple of reactions to these kinds of things. One, we can just bag it and walk away and point fingers as an outsider. You know, maybe an outsider who used to be an insider. Or as an insider, we can work, you know, towards redemption. Mm-hmm. For the thing that God loves the most.
And I would say the Bible makes it clear what the qualifications of an elder are. And so if you have somebody who's hungry for power and hungry for money, they shouldn't be an elder.
Right.
And so if you've got churches where the pastor, whoever's at the top of that food chain, doesn't have any accountability and isn't really even known by the church,
yeah.
You shouldn't go to that church. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, we're part of the problem, mm-hmm. because we're not, there's people that are going to these churches.
Right.
And the pastor's driving a Learjet and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's like, we're partly responsible for this, the fact that it even exists. So,
So what part does, and I wanted to ask this question just real quick. What is the difference between giving and stewardship? And I mean that in particularly on the part of a churchgoer, a Christian.
I think I've shared this story before. I had a guy one time who came to me and said, "Here, I want to give $200 towards the mission fund so I don't have to go anywhere." Okay. And he just was very upfront about this. This is why I'm giving, is so I don't have to hop on a plane. Right. He was just giving. He wasn't, you know, stewarding anything.
Here, God, here's $200. Don't send me to Africa.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think stewardship carries the idea that everything belongs to God, and my time, my assets, my home, my hospitality, you know, everything. And so being a good steward with what God's given you, it's kind of like the parable of the talents. You know, it's really, I've given to whom much is given, much is expected. And so stewardship's a much broader thing than just the idea of, you know, dropping something in the plate that as it comes by every time and, you know, I've done my part. No, everything belongs to God. Your whole life is his, and everything you do right now is for his glory and, you know, to advance the mission of the church.
Well, even think about, you know, we had somebody not long ago or earlier this summer, you know, who beautified the outside of the building without being asked to do it.
He got caught, though.
Yeah, he got caught, but wanted to remain anonymous, but still just kind of took upon himself to say, hey, I can do something to make the outside look a little better. Like that was stewardship.
Yeah.
Okay. And another aspect of that is really this is not just something for pastors and church leadership to be looking out for, these kinds of things that can develop, you know, being transparent and yourselves being good stewards as those in charge of, you know, church finances and things like that. But on the part of the giver, this is a kind of an all hands on deck thing. You should be watching, you know, paying attention to these things. This isn't just for somebody else to do. In other words, I just give my money and what happens behind the doors over there is no concern of mine whatsoever. Yes, it is. You know, and you can see, you know, some of these things develop and we all need to be aware of them as opposed to trying to sign it off on somebody else and just saying, well, I'm giving and I'm done with it, you know?
Yeah.
So there is a... okay, so I got to take off, but I want to, well, thank you guys for this, your comments on this. Hope it was helpful. Next week's ODP is going to be on how to get the most out of your Bible study with Herman Who.
Do we know any, what? Horton Hears a Who?
Horton Hears a Who,
Dr. Seuss.
Oh. No, this is a different Herman. This is Herman Who. We will invite what's his last name?
Nudix.
Herman Nudix. Okay, so we'll be spending some time on that next week.
All right.
Okay. Are we out?
I think we're out. Do you want to pray?
Well, I think he's got to go.
I've got to go.
Thank you, Lord, for our time. Amen.
1decentpastor. If you'd like more information about the church, go to our website at thedoor3r.org.